Hey everybody, Patrick Connor here, and welcome to Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. We got a special show today for a special event this weekend. Well, I don't know how special the event is, but the show's special. I don't know that any other podcast or video podcast or anything like that has got, what, three different Hall of Fame, International Boxing Hall of Fame electors, three of the most good-looking people in boxing. One of those is true anyway. Look, we got Aris Pina, my good buddy, and also my other good buddy, Bryn Jonathan Butler. How are you guys doing, man?
Everything's great, my man. Great to be here. Exactly.
Yeah, it's so awesome. It's like kind of having two separate worlds collide on here for me. Like, that I didn't mean to keep separate, I guess. They just wound up being separate, but happy to be here anyway.
For sure. It's a big fight this weekend. We all got to get together for it.
You know, it's Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder. I kind of feel like there's even been a little bit of argument about how much focus has been on this. Earlier today, I saw a number of posts on social media suggesting that these fans and some of them media members felt that there really was not much hype for this fight or wasn't much interest in this fight. What do you guys think? Are you excited for it? Bryn, where are you at for this fight?
Oh, I'm really excited. I mean, I think with Wilder, you just have this punch that, I mean, is the greatest right hand that I've ever seen in boxing. And I spent a fair bit of time with, I think, the second best right hand that I've ever seen in person, which is Felix Simone. I've never saw Lennox Lewis fight in person, but I mean, watching Wilder in training camp preparing for Fury the first time, it was interesting because every sparring partner was meant to mimic Fury. And I thought, this is the worst elite fighter I've ever seen in my life. He is so inept at the fundamentals of boxing that it was totally surreal. And every writer who was there was down from England. And they were all saying the same thing when I was like, so what did you think about the sparring? They said, if he doesn't knock him out, he will lose every second of every round, which ultimately has proved true in the two fights. If Wilder has been unable to knock this guy down, Fury's won every second, pretty much. I don't think Wilder's won 5 seconds of any of the fights. And yet he has this tremendous hammer that is this great equalizer. So I think that makes it always exciting. And Fury is a great showman in terms of selling these things. I think if Wilder loses this, you're going to see a kind of Bobby Chez-like disintegration. Just because I think Wilder has made so many excuses that are just preposterous that his stock has plummeted tremendously. You have the stock of Anthony Joshua plummeting a great deal, I think, after Usyk, which isn't to take anything away from Joshua. It's just the way he was being built up with Klitschko. I think there was a perception that we were having a generational talent. And Usyk has kind of maybe emerged as probably maybe the best fighter of the group. Of all these guys, and we thought it was going to be one of the three big giants, but maybe Usyk could beat them all after what we just saw over in the UK. So there's many levels of this that are interesting. If it goes Wilder's way and he's just able to land something, maybe he can put Fury away in the first round. But I mean, if he's unable to do that and his confidence is as rattled as I think it is, I don't know why this wouldn't be a lot easier for Fury than the second time.
And actually, I forgot to ask, but Aris, have you done like the count for any Deontay Wilder fights? Because that would be another unique thing for this show. We got somebody who has spent some time in Deontay Wilder's camp. And then if you've done any counts, I mean, that would be pretty big.
I have actually.
I knew you had.
It was ringside for, it was before he won the title against Taverne. And I wish I can remember who it was on an undercard of a Hopkins fight, but it wasn't like a big one. Well, it was Hopkins as a light heavyweight, obviously, as light heavyweight champion. I don't remember if it was an AC or I think it was at Barclays, actually. It might have been because I think Quillen fought, the one who was about to fight Munguia right now. God, his name just slipped me. Rosado, Gabe Rosado.
Oh yeah, Gabe Rosado.
So it was on that card, if that helps anything. Anyways, that was one, that was wild. It was like super wild back then. You know what I mean? I think he was actually hurt in that fight briefly before he landed the equalizer that Bryn mentioned earlier about that right hand and then finish it off. You know, Wilder is an absolute monstrous puncher, and but his stats, like, you, if you want to go into a stats type of deal, like, Fury dominates all of them, and he has throughout those entire fights. Like, it's just one of those fights again that I'm not sure, and, you know, he's gone to the woodshed now with Malik Scott, who has been one of his mentors and confidants and everything like that for a while now after they became opponents, but they've always been friends and close buddies for a long time, and Scott's always been his corner. So I'm not sure if anything that can translate to Wilder improving at this next fight, but in terms of how the stats looked and everything like that, Wilder is completely inferior to Fury when it comes to most things, except obviously when it comes to, you know, eraser power.
So do you really care much about this fight, or do you feel
I absolutely do. No, it's very intriguing because it's heavyweight boxing. Anything can happen in the heavyweight division. That's the one thing that you got to love about the division, is that even when you're dead set and you have an idea what can happen, things can just turn automatically and go all over the place. And the fact that this is an all heavyweight card is like an homage to my old mentor, Cedric Kushner, my old boss, rest in peace. So I'm excited for it. But like the first fight, Wilder showed that he can hurt Fury. He could drop him. And even though he lost, like Brent said earlier, every second of the fight, he's those seconds that he didn't lose on, he had Fury almost completely out. Second fight, Fury, you know, changed strategies a little bit, gained some more weight to make even more of an advantage and kind of beat the shit out of Wilder. That wasn't even competitive. But with this third fight coming up, you know, the thing that made me more intrigued about it is that Fury's coming off of a bout with COVID. We don't know potentially how that could affect him or where he might be, you know, with that, because recovery is different for everybody. There's been a lot of rumors about how much Fury's really trained for this fight and how much he's really prepared for it, considering how easily he thinks he can handle Wilder. And a lot of people are starting to believe into the fact that Wilder is a different person now, and he's really reinvented himself with Malik Scott. So with all those things in mind, yeah, I'm definitely excited for it, because it's, again, you never know what can happen. Do I favor Fury? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, Wilder still has an eraser, and you just never know. It's a very intriguing fight for me. And at the end of it, also, too, it's going to put a definitive end to this trilogy, and we can move on with the division.
Do you guys agree with the 3-1 favorite that Fury is?
Yes,
that's the
absolutely.
Last favorite. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I think at least 2-1 would be appropriate, considering I mean, I think that Deontay Wilder won a little bit more of the first fight than a few seconds, but I mean, at the same time, I don't think that it was enough, barring, you know, apart from the knockdown, apart from the massive shot that he landed, for the most part, this is only fresh in my mind because I did my studying. I watched this today along with the rematch just to kind of make sure that I was knowing what I was talking about and not talking out of my ass, because I do that sometimes. But no, I was watching it, and it was almost not shocking, but I was surprised that watching it again, how easily Tyson Fury was able to keep Deontay Wilder off balance. And Deontay Wilder is already kind of off balance, but he was keeping him even more so off balance, just with constant movement and a good jab. There were times when Deontay Wilder actually caught him with his jab pretty decently. And then there were actually a few good left hooks that he snuck in early in the fight. But then he got totally away from both of those things and was just kind of following Tyson Fury around for far too much of that fight. But then in the rematch, obviously, I would say the first fight, that being a draw, I wasn't totally upset given, I mean, it's kind of like that knockout was massive. And that sticks out in your head enough that not to overcome the however many rounds that he probably lost apart from that, but it's just, you know, it almost like it feels right because one guy did a shitload of damage in that short period of time. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it felt like Tyson Fury righted that possible wrong in the rematch. But I think that it's fairly intriguing. If nothing else, another kind of X factor going into this fight that I saw someone mention, I actually didn't even hear this, so I don't know how true it is, and hopefully I'm not repeating some stupid rumor that's not true, but somebody had mentioned that one of Tyson Fury's kids was not doing very well and was, like they said, quote unquote, he almost lost his kid this summer. Huh. I don't know exactly what that means, but
I never heard any of that. That's crazy.
No, me neither.
If it is true, obviously, number one, that's horrible, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. even coming close to losing a child. But number two, that's obviously a pretty massive distraction. As far as the punching power and stuff like that, what you're probably going to be hearing in the lead up to this fight, I've heard in the lead up to tons of other fights, puncher's chance. And essentially a puncher's chance is like a really small chance. And that's, it's something that a lot of fans and pundits kind of get mystified by and allow themselves to be hypnotized by the old puncher's chance. Even though, you know, we know from our experience that skill, the vast majority of the time, skill and speed beat power. And so the old puncher's chance is just equates to a really small chance. However, it's almost as if the farther you go up on the scale, the more that puncher's chance kind of like, okay, I could kind of see that a little bit. But then you give it to a guy like Deontay Wilder, who, regardless of however many bums it is, you think he knocked out, and he did. He definitely did. But even knocking out 45 whatever bums takes some power. Dude can obviously punch, and anybody denying that's just being an idiot. So when you bring that element into this, it's always there, you know, and it was a reminder later in that first fight. So there's some intrigue there. However, to circle right back to, you know, where you started out here, 2-1, 3-1, I think is pretty appropriate.
You know, it was kind of interesting watching with the Usyk fight, because it reminded me a bit of where we thought these guys were when they were all undefeated, the three great heavyweights that we had. And I was sort of like, what's going to happen stylistically? What would be the most fun to watch with a pairing? And after seeing what Usyk was able to do to Joshua and what Fury was able to do to Wilder, I'm kind of thinking, are these guys sort of Michael Grant, or are they Ron Lyle? Like, how would Ron Lyle or Ken Norton do? Like, would Ken Norton dominate all of these guys? Would Ron Lyle dominate them? Because we were thinking, like, who is Anthony Joshua in the scheme of things in terms of after Klitschko? And we've never seen him again after that Klitschko fight. That guy has never shown up again. And I think the same thing could happen with Wilder here. You were talking about the puncher's chance. And I mean, the thing you left out is that Fury is much more comfortable in the ring than Wilder is. Wilder does not have anywhere near the confidence that Fury does. Fury has this Ali-like joy being with the pressure that was there after the first fight. He was dropped and counted out, we thought, and then he springs up and he comes back and is just a boss the entire fight. And I remember, Patrick, you and I were talking about that fight. I mean, I didn't know that he was going to do what he did, but I remember just saying to you, if he follows through on what he's saying he's going to do, I think he could very well knock him out in three rounds, which was my prediction, that he'd knock him out in three. And I just don't know what Wilder can do to improve fighting on the back foot if Fury goes back to the same game plan that was so successful, where he was never hurt, he was not really hit with much, and Wilder, like, from what I saw with him sparring against three different guys who were all very tall and had reach, he did nothing against those three guys. He lost almost every round of sparring that I watched. And you know, I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of, like, his punching power is unlike anything I've ever seen. And not just the punching power, but the way he can close distance with that right hand. It's amazing to see how much distance he can close and fire, especially when you see he can't do anything else. I mean, I took a quote from Breland, who I love in boxing. I mean, I think everybody does. And I can't believe he got scapegoated for that fight. And I said, like, where is this guy at in terms of his skill relative to you? Like, at what age were you when you could do what he was doing? And I think he said he was 9 or 10. And I understand there are different weight classes and everything, but it really did put something into perspective that I think we were avoiding what our eyes were showing us when he fought Ortiz, where he was losing those fights, maybe not handily, but convincingly.
No, he was absolutely. The rematch especially, he was losing convincingly. Right. It was a slow fight, but he was getting outboxed throughout it. Totally. But you were totally right about that right hand. It has how short it landed. All it took was one.
It's amazing. It's just totally amazing. He's this contradiction of the most inept, maladroit, elite heavyweight I've ever seen with the greatest right hand I've ever seen, by far.
It's very strange combination. He is one of the most inept fighters and high level I've ever seen. But with that one eraser that he has, it really doesn't matter because he knows how to set it up. And he does know how to set it up. No matter how goofy he looks and how much he trips over his feet and how bad it is, once he knows he can get a beat on that, it's, you know, there's a deep chance there's going to be some high drama in a fight.
And he's tough, too. I mean, he took a beating like a man in that second Fury fight. I don't give him credit in terms of how he made all the excuses afterwards, but he took a beating in that fight. He took some pretty serious shots. I don't think he's ever had a great chin, particularly. I noticed that his group seems to keep yanking YouTube videos of him being dropped in sparring every time people try to upload them. And I'm not talking about the amateur fight with that Russian who knocked him out. There's another one, too.
No, there was a pro, Harold Skoniers.
I think that's right.
Yeah, Harold Skoniers was a journeyman who used to be served as a sparring partner for David Tua. Hmm. And I swear I've seen the video of that fight a long, long, long time ago because I think it was out there. It had to have been out there. But right. Like you said, it's been yanked. But Wilder got dropped hard. And I remember when that fight happened and he got dropped hard, it went out on the, you know, on the internet that they were like, oh, Wilder just suffered a major knockdown in the fight, but he came back to win it. But then again, it was all hush-hush after that because they were still building him up and they wanted to try to protect him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he's knocked out 41 of 42 guys, but it's just, you wonder if Fury does something similar or even more convincing, where does he go from here? Because I'd love to see Wilder and Joshua fight, especially at this point after what happened to Joshua from Usyk. And I thought Joshua put on a pretty good performance. He was a good fighter, just beat by a much better fighter. And I don't even know. I mean, Fury-Usyk, I think, is a very intriguing matchup. I mean, you think that Fury's just way too big, but boy, that Usyk, I mean, that is a tough pace to maintain. He has so much willpower, so much skill. He's so evasive. And I mean, that straight left he was landing effortlessly against Joshua. Man, I mean, it's an interesting division right now.
Yeah, that's one of those kinds of fights that I think could wind up being a little bit of a pose and feint fest for much of it because mm-hmm. of the styles that they both come to the, you know, to bring to the table. To just kind of go back just slightly on what Aris had said about Deontay Wilder's skill and his ability to set up like what he's landing and his big punches. That's one thing that I actually noticed watching that first fight earlier today. And that's not to say that I don't really think that Deontay Wilder is supremely skilled per se, but just like you guys were saying, he has that one eraser or that one particular thing. And that one thing that he has, he knows how to do very well. He knows how to set up. And he was actually, Tyson Fury kept ducking his head down. He kept ducking his head forward and down, forward and down. Yeah. Hopefully my voice doesn't go too bad from the mic from there, but he was just ducking in a way every time Deontay Wilder was loading up on his right hand that was like, I guess, predictable. And then finally, Deontay Wilder kind of adjusted and clocked him right as he ducked and hit him perfectly, like right on the temple, kind of right around the ear, and then caught him again with that left hook as he was falling, making for a totally classic knockdown. And then fucking Undertaker rising from the grave performance meme-worthy moment afterwards.
That was our Larry Holmes, Ernie Shavers of this era.
Yeah,
not as devastating because Shavers is on a classic film.
It wasn't quite Shavers, but it wasn't too far from it.
No,
it wasn't
that far from it. Yeah.
It was a massive set of punches. And so him getting up from that was fantastic. But in any case, just to kind of also hammer home the point that he's not necessarily just a crude slugger, not to say that either of you said that, but either way, it's a very intriguing division, as you said. And I think that this kind of fight, Aris, to respond to you, does hopefully put to bed this matchup, this, you know, trilogy. But Deontay Wilder is there. And if he does win, you know, it reignites the whole thing.
There's no losers for this fight in terms of what the future of the division holds, because both guys just bring so much, you know, intrigue into what future fights can be held. I mean, Wilder, for his power and his explosiveness, whatever the unknown factor of what can be in a fight, like you said, he can lose every second of the entire fight. All he needs is one punch. He can stay a factor in this division. I mean, he's in his mid-30s, but that's not that old for a heavyweight. He can stay a factor in this division for a long time, especially because it's not the deepest it's ever really been, too. There's a lot of quality guys up there, but there's a lot of guys that Wilder could still wipe out. And he makes for fun fights. I mean, you know, sometimes they can drag a little bit here and there, but he always makes for intrigue because of the power that he holds. So he can still lay out there. Fury the same way, because of his skill, the way you don't, you know, his intrigue, how crazy he can be, the way you're not sure what he's going to show up with, but he still just ends up, you know, somehow winning. Like, there's a lot of intrigue with everything in the division. So either guy that wins this fight, there's going to be a lot of excitement where it can go. It's just the politics of how long it will take before the winner of this fight can fight the eventual winner of Usyk and Joshua when they eventually have a rematch, because you know that's going to happen. I mean, that's just the problem in boxing in general, is that it takes so fucking long to try to drag all of this together to make an undisputed champion. I mean, look how long it took for Lennox and Holyfield to finally get together in the late 90s, early 2000s. So it's like the same thing with this. It's like, you know, we just want to get to a unified force, but with the way with Joshua losing again to Usyk, that made the heavyweight into a tailspin again and got very exciting. And then whatever happens with the result of this is going to make it even better. So the heavyweight division is in a good way right now, I think. And I'm excited to see after this result for this weekend to see what can happen from here. At least one side of it with Joshua and Wilder, hopefully, barring any craziness or something stupid can happen, because you know that can happen, that will at least be put to bed. We can get Usyk and Wilder to finish their business, and then we can move on.
Are you guys kind of surprised of Wilder's lack of marketability? Despite, like, I mean, when I was down in Alabama and Tuscaloosa, I was just thinking, like, the state where Joe Lewis came from, and it's a good story. I mean, where he emerged from and the daughter narrative that he had with Spina Bifida. And I liked him. Like, I mean, he was interesting to talk to, and he was courteous and considerate and engaging. I've never liked his antics in the ring. Like, him, his version of showmanship has never worked for me. But I liked him personally. It was kind of like Roy Jones. Like, I never liked Roy Jones' showmanship either, but I love
him. If you meet them as a person, yeah, absolutely.
He's wonderful. He's wonderful. And yet Wilder doesn't really seem to sell many tickets in the U.S. And he had a real opportunity. They put him on Showtime, like with some TV shows. I think Brian Koppelman put him on Billions or something like that. Like, he had all this opportunity to audition for the American public, but he never seemed to capture the imagination, even though he has the highest knockout percentage ever. He does everything that people want, but it never just seemed to get him over for some reason. I just wonder what you guys think, why that is.
Well, I mean, I don't really have a concrete answer, but I think some people are kind of suspicious of boxing in general, suspicious enough in the U.S. that they're going to be a little bit more skeptical, a little bit more resistant to backing a fighter simply because they're American and stuff like that. Like, boxing's just not really in that place. But I think that they've demonstrated that when he has fought in Alabama, he's managed to sell some pretty decent tickets. Outside of there, though, that's kind of the problem. It's similar to, I suppose, Terrence Crawford outside of Omaha or something like that. You know, in Omaha, he's massive, but outside of Omaha, it's like, yeah, you know, kind of lukewarm. People recognize that he's very, very good, but they don't really seem to respond to his personality. They don't really seem to respond in a way that, you know, demonstrates it at the ticket booth. But I can definitely say that it seems as though Deontay Wilder has kind of taken a hit since the rematch. And this is something I wanted to ask you guys about separately, because I want to hear what Aris has to say about this too. But with the excuses I know get harped on to the point where both sides, both of the people who are whining about the excuses get annoying, and then the people who agree with the excuses are also pretty annoying. So that's not helpful. Like, those kinds of things I don't think are helpful, and it would be a lot more helpful personality wise if he were to just say, like, I fucked up, you know, and I'll do better in the rematch. But I don't know what the answer is as far as marketability. I'm curious what Aris thinks.
You know, it's interesting. Like, after the fight, he came out with a bunch of different things all over the place, just wilding out, you know, saying that his, first off, his costume was wrong. And then he started attacking Mark Breland of all people. And like Bryn, like you mentioned earlier, Breland's one of the most respected and nicest people in the industry. If you met him, you'd love him. And there's no way that he was going to do anything that was going to do, like, that would try to compromise Deontay Wilder or screw with him or mess with him with his fight. That's not the type of person he was. So that certainly hurt his reputation. And I don't know, like, all the excuses that he made throughout this fight, after the fight, showed a person that, like, seriously had never contemplated ever losing and built himself to a way, but, like, mentally it just looked really bad. And any type of momentum that he gained in terms of followers and anything like that really hurt him because of that. Because, like, a lot of people, like Joshua, for instance, when Joshua first lost to Ruiz, you know, that was one of the biggest upsets in heavyweight history, boxing history, however you want to put it. But he took the high road on that. He said, you know what, he caught me, he beat me, so-and-so, you know, I'm just going to come back stronger from that. And a lot of people respected him for that. Same thing with Usyk. He didn't make any excuses after that fight. Usyk was the better man. He outboxed me, he beat me, so on. Wilder just has been in denial the entire time since then. And each claim has become even more intense since the last one. And that doesn't resonate well with the public, who just want to, like, you know, when it's clear that none of that actually took place. There's no evidence that there was any type of wrongdoing done in this type of fight, that Fury cheated, that his team was tampering with him, that Mark Breland poisoned his water, that, you know, Kenny Bayless was the referee, correct, was against him in any such way for that fight. Like, instead of it just addressed, I think it was this press conference, this recent one that might have happened, that happened today, was the first time that he finally admitted, you know what, I came with the wrong game plan for the second fight and I got beat for it. You know, for a person to finally admit that is showing a person that's, like, mentally weak and not a person that, you know, it's hard to really gain a following with the public when you start making those excuses. And if you also add, you know, something I'll add to this, talking before this fight, saying, you know, before he fought Fury, saying, I'm trying to catch a body, I want to kill somebody in the ring, I want to do this, I want to do that. That's not going to help your cause either. Nobody goes out into the ring and saying, I want to actively kill somebody. And then Wilder was one of the first people to do that. Well, you know, Wilder's actively saying that. And then a lot of other factors in between, combining all of that with the weird flux that boxing is in, where it's a popular sport, but only certain guys have really made that mainstream popularity, and it hasn't really resonated in the heavyweight division for a while, because there hasn't been an American that, like, I hate to say it, but, like, you know, even though Klitschko dominated, other Europeans are, like, boxing's a healthy place, but when it comes to the heavyweight division, the general public is looking for another Mike Tyson. He's the same guy that's always been back there. And even though Wilder had it, it's just, it wasn't really the same degree. Boxing still is trying to, like, you know, it doesn't have the same relationship with the heavyweight division, the general public, that they used to back then. So combining all of that, that's where you get with Wilder today. It all depends on Saturday, how this goes and stuff. But I can tell you this, there's a lot more interest in this fight in the general public than it would be for another fight, you know, another division, stuff like that. Boxing and this fight in general is still, you know, there's a lot of interest in it. Hope I answered that well enough.
I think so. And it actually reminded me too, not to take it away from, not to suggest that it's not Wilder's responsibility or that it's not his fault or something like that, because I don't know. But one thing that I did forget to say, and that I do think for at least a while affected his marketability, is that when he was with Golden Boy, he was basically stuffed on, like, undercards, you know, like, on way down on, like, pay-per-view undercards, if he was on them at all. And there were a number of different instances where he was just fighting in some random ass fucking gym or something like that. And so, and I don't even know if those cards were even had anything to do with Golden Boy at all. Like, I'd have to look. I honestly don't know.
They so, have I mean, to get a cut for it if they were his promoter, no?
I would imagine, but I don't know the nature of the contract or anything like that. But
yeah, right.
The point
he did
is,
play in some backwater hillbilly places.
He totally did. And some of those fights that are on YouTube, it's like they look suspect as shit, dude. And then my point being that generally speaking, especially in the US, when you have a big hard-hitting heavyweight that you're, dude, you got to get them out there. You're promoting them, you're getting them on TV when you can. And I get that also he didn't have a lot of amateur experience despite the Olympic bronze medal. Despite that, he still needed experience and they needed to build him up. And I've also said in the past, you should do that more off TV with fighters, and I do believe that. But at the same time, I think that that happened for like a long time in his career, probably a little bit too long, where I think that it reflected the fact that they saw him fighting and also believed that his development wasn't that good, that his skills were not that good. And so the way that he was promoted, I think, reflected that. And that's not helpful either in terms of marketability, when it doesn't appear that your own promoter really believes in you, really wants to back you, especially when you're a big, tall, hard-hitting heavyweight. So that probably also affected, you know, his marketability pretty early on.
Well, I mean, his training camp for Fury, the first one, I've just never seen a professional fighter like what he was doing. Is JDs would have him go in the ring for four rounds to shadow box, and he would just move around like a mummy. It was just this, and D's would say, "That's it, champ. That's it, D. That's it, D." And I was saying, "What is he doing? Like, I don't know what he's doing." And then the sparring would happen, and he looked like he was sleepwalking the whole time. And D is just acting as if he's watching Cassius Clay, like it is, like getting ready for Liston.
Yes, absolutely.
It was just so surreal, and I was kind of looking at Breland. I was like, "You know how awful this looks, right?" And he's like, well, in the heavyweight division, it doesn't make a difference. If you can punch, yeah. So that, but everybody else was acting like this was the next coming of like, just, he has everything. And I was like, he has one thing. And that one thing is amazing. But in every other area, I've never seen somebody this one-dimensional in my life. And maybe it is that if you're a heavyweight, you can get away with it. But I just got a photo that I took from the gym. And it really stood out for me because I thought, ooh, this might not age well. And it was a ledger that was hanging in his gym in Northport, Alabama. And one of it said, one side says short-term champs. And there's Leon Spinks, Trevor Burbick, Pinklin Thomas, Tony Tubbs, Frank Bruno, and Stavert. And on the other side of the ledger is Marciano, Ali, Foreman, Holmes, Lewis. And then the biggest name is Wilder.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, you look back at that. I mean, this is when he was undefeated and everything. But, I mean, already with the first Ortiz fight, I was kind of like, I don't know that you really want to jump the gun on this one, boys. Like we should probably.
Yeah, don't put your name with the legends, man. Really?
And bigger than all of the legends, right? Like bigger than all of them.
You don't get your girlfriend's name tattooed on you, right? You don't get wrapped to the ring. Like you never walk to the ring with like a wrapper. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know. And then you never malign the champs before you. You know, there's like these rules, and that's another one, is don't ever put up a massive stencil of your name that's making it look as though you're the, yeah.
No, it's just
breaking a cardinal rule.
Your king is here.
Yeah, man.
Well, and so you were asking about all the excuses too, because I was going through what we had. The ring walk costume was too heavy. Okay, this sort of weird Skeletor circa 1970s, what is it called? Studio 54 kind of outfit. Like, okay, spiked water, biased officiating, which is a particularly interesting one, because I thought the officiating was biased, but against Fury. All of the times where he would break them up, which was totally working to the advantage of Fury in the second fight, in terms of putting his weight onto Wilder, Bayless was jumping in there all the time, freeing them up or giving Wilder lots of time to heal after he'd get hit by shots that clearly, contrary to what he said, hurt him.
Yeah.
You can see his balance gone and everything. I'm not saying Bayless was like egregiously awful, but it was bad. It was taking steps that were clearly biased in Wilder's favor. Contrary to
Bayless
him saying,
Bayless has always been one of those guys that's never been a fan of infighting. Like, that's why he's always been a favorite of Floyd's fights.
Right.
For refereeing. Absolutely.
And then the trainer betrayal, I mean, I don't know if Breland saved Wilder's life, but I mean, I don't know that anybody other than Wilder was criticizing that stoppage. That was a very reasonable stoppage.
Completely.
Fury has no stamina issues. This isn't Anthony Joshua, and he was getting ready to just take his head off. Wilder was having trouble throughout that entire fight. His equilibrium was off. I mean, we're talking before about the puncher's chance and everything. The other big issue here is that Fury is taller. He's longer. He's got 3 inches extra reach. He's far more mobile, and he's backing this guy up. So, I mean, if you're completely one-dimensional and Fury knows you're one-dimensional, I'm not sure how you're going to have a training camp with Malik Scott as if this is the reincarnation of Emmanuel Stewart or something. Except Emmanuel Stewart is not working with Vladimir Klitschko or Lennox Lewis. He's working with a guy that just has a cannon, and that's it. So it's hard for me to imagine this one going differently unless, as you mentioned before, Fury has some issue with his kid or wasn't able to train or COVID was more severe than we've been led to believe in terms of its impact. But, I mean, the blueprint is there, and we're talking about a guy in Wilder who is – the most ill-equipped to make adjustments of maybe any elite heavyweight we've ever seen, with no particular trainer there to facilitate it. So it's hard for me to see this one going any differently.
And I watched his videos that they posted with him and Malik Scott at their training camp. Right? And it's like, you know, I'm glad Wilder is definitely motivated for this fight. That brings intrigue, and it does bring, you know, more interest in the fight. But at the same time, like you just said, Brent, at the end of it, there's nothing he can do, because you know, from everything he has to build up, you can't just do that in one training camp with a trainer that he just built with that to make it like this. All right. And then there's, like, you know, you see him trying to slip and slide, and I still see the same awkwardness that he does. Everybody's been joking about his videos on Twitter, where you see, like, his training camp. Yes, he is moving a little bit more. He's boxing. He's trying, you know, his new trainer now, like, is actually showing that he's, like, Malik Scott is showing that he's actually trying to work with him. But I'm not sure that it's enough time that you can really, really, really make an impact that so much that you're going to be able to make a difference in this fight. Because Fury, even if he's not as motivated, we've seen him. The Fury is such a wild card, because of how funky he can be and how he acts and how everything like that. That's how he is. He likes to play mind games with the world. It's not just opponent. It's not just his opponent. He's playing basically chess with everybody. And at the end of the day, he still just has his skills and knows how to fight. He's shown that in many different ways. And he has a lot more layers than Wilder does.
Yeah.
And Wilder trying to change everything up, showing that now he can box, he can be a body puncher, which was absolutely... I'm not even going to try to lie. I made a joke about him being the next Mike McCallum from those videos. And all this other stuff. It's almost crazy to think that he's going to be able to make an impact this much. I mean, he's definitely motivated for it. So I think he's going to, you know, try, and it's going to be interesting for a few rounds. But at the end of the day, I can't see how he's going to win unless Fury has regressed.
Yeah, and you know, one of the weird things is that Wilder has a pretty good jab. He just doesn't use it.
Exactly. Breland was working on that. Instead, he would just kind of follow around because he fell in love so much with his power, and everyone talking so much shit about how he's the greatest puncher since, you know, sliced bread or whatever it may be, that all he had to do was land one punch and then just follow the guy around, like he did in the Ortiz rematch. He barely threw a punch in that fight and was getting outboxed until, you know, the finisher.
Yeah.
Look, I hate to interject to do this, but it must be done. If you've seen my shirt, Bren, and you're just going to have to sit through this. You can giggle through it if you must, and I understand, but I'm going to tell you all, this weekend we're looking at the heavyweight championship of the world, as it were. But speaking of heavyweight champions, support for Knuckles and Gloves is brought to you by Manscaped, and Manscaped is the heavyweight champion of below the waist grooming. I'm serious. 100% serious. In fact, Manscaped offers precision engineering for your family jewels. Look, I'm going to tell you a little something here, okay? First of all, you go to manscaped.com and you get 20% off and free shipping if you use the code GLOVE, which is our unique code. But look, man, you just imagine something, okay? Like you got to go through the rainforest. You got to go through the jungle. You got to go through some crazy landscape, right? You got to use a machete. Got to use some sort of crazy ass tool that you don't want to have to use. What if you had a chainsaw? What if you had a wireless chainsaw? What if you had a wireless chainsaw that had a light to guide your way? What if you had a wireless chainsaw with a light where you can adjust the length, where you can cut to the length that you want? You know what I'm saying? Look, that's right. Come on now. You know it. I'm actually describing the lawnmower 4.0 from Manscaped. That's exactly what I'm describing, except for instead of this landscape, we're manscaping, and I'm talking about your balls. All right. You got a 4000K LED spotlight that goes on and off when you need it for a more precise shave. And the Lawnmower 4.0 also allows you to customize your trim through an additional guard length. And so again, wireless charging, come on guys, you got to do this. It's 20% off and free shipping with the code GLOVE, GLOVE at manscaped.com. And that's 20% off with free shipping, GLOVE. All right. So unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job at Manscaped. Heavyweight championship of actual boxing and not junk. We're back to
it. Patrick, I mean, I would fully be interested in going to, I mean, I'm at manscaped.com right now looking to use your code. But my question is, in conjunction with attacking a wilderness, according to Ancestry DNA, comprised of 31% Ashkenazi Jewish origins, with 13% Swedish and Danish origins, is it equipped to deal with the wilderness that would be created from that sort of ethnic breakdown?
To my knowledge, Manscaped is a totally fully accepting man grooming company. So it's like whatever your ethnicity is, dude, you're good to go.
Well, then my last question is just, will it in any way assist me dealing with ear and unsightly nose hair?
Yes,
that's a possibility. But you're also going to have to talk to your barber on that one.
I'm just wondering if there's a kid that might include something to address that concern.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to have to tell you that there is a kit, and you can go to manscaped.com and look at the several kits that they have. One of them actually includes a trimmer for your nose hair. I think one of them might include a trimmer for your face. Dude, you don't want to mix these up. You don't want to get a trimmer for your nose and then a trimmer for your balls. I mean, I could see how they could be similar looking overall, but you don't want to mix these things up. So you even get a carrying case and a storage case to keep them separate. It's pretty magical if we're being honest about this Manscaped business.
What makes it the 4.0? What was the 3.0?
I'm not entirely sure. It could be possible that it's an exponential growth. So they just went from 2 to 4.
Maybe it's like self-cleansing so that you can go from balls straight up to ear and nose hair without worrying about it. Like maybe you do this drunkenly and you just need to be, it's like beer goggles. Just go for it.
I think that the whole point is that you just got to order it and then figure it out once you get it.
I'm actually considering ordering it.
Well, then this whole sponsorship is it's right there. It's right there. Might pay off.
I just can't believe that there is a website where it's describing a trademark term, crop reviver, ball spray toner.
Bro, like this is serious business here. They're getting much longer than the minute or so that they asked for.
I'm just looking at the website as we're talking.
But if you actually visit it, it's pretty dumbfounding. But in any case, getting back to this heavyweight actual boxing here, I was gonna ask you guys too, before we had this fight finalized, before we had Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder 3 finalized, it looked as though that was not going to be the fight, that it looked as though we're going to be going in an entirely different direction here, and that it was going to be potentially Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury. So that was, you know, a pretty exciting possibility that we're going to finally get to some big clash like that. But then they took it to court, old school style, like early 2000s status, Lennox Lewis taking Don King to court to get his rematch with Haseem Rahman and all sorts of shit like that. And it winds up being that Deontay Wilder fights for his right to get this rubber match. And so I think that that would probably put to bed any sort of notion that he didn't want the fight, was scared for the fight or anything like that. I mean, who really ever fucking believes anything like that in high level boxing anyway? Hopefully not you, listener or viewer, but regardless, you know, what do you guys think about that kind of like to do? Does that affect your outlook on this fight whatsoever? The fact that it kind of had to go to court in order for this to happen?
I mean, I wanted to see Fury Joshua a lot more than I wanted to see this fight again, but I mean, I like where it's going in terms of there's seems to be some sincere animosity between the two of them. It seems to have really pissed off Fury to have to go back to the well one more time after an incredibly definitive statement in the rematch. So I like that energy going in. I mean, they seem like they just can't stand each other at these press conferences. But I don't know. I think in terms of the health of the sport, Usyk is going to become like another Klitschko. If he cleans, like runs the table against all these guys, I don't think it's going to be very good for boxing in America. Just because, like you were saying before, you know, do we need an American champion? I think for a lot of general fans, we do, unfortunately.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
I think we do. And I think Usyk has a good personality, and I think he fought a relatively exciting fight. I mean, I think he could have closed the show against Joshua. Also interesting that like 6 second early bell ringing that saved Joshua at the end of that fight was sort of interesting. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know where Wilder goes from here. If Fury wins, Fury is so marketable over in the UK. But I think people are waiting for Fury Joshua, really. I mean, I'm looking forward to this fight, but that was the fight I wanted to watch, just to see how their styles would mix.
I was excited for Fury Joshua, just like you guys said. I was really intrigued. That was the fight that people have been talking about for a number of years. That was like the main, you know, when it comes to the end of the line, that was the one that most people generally thought that would be the fight that would be at the end of it. And but this being boxing, I was not surprised that the judge sided over and decided that, you know what, Deontay Wilder was actually righted for a third fight, and here we are. So again, like I mentioned earlier, what I'm happy most about this fight is that I think it will put a definitive ending on this trilogy. It's not gonna, unless something crazy happens, you know, a cut eye, you know, low, whatever it may be, something crazy could happen because this is boxing. Some dumb shit could happen and it would mar it and postpone it to a point that, you know, we would have to have another fight to make an absolute definitive resolution. But I think that this fight will be an ending to this, and that whatever happens with this fight, we can move on to eventually getting an undisputed champion again. It will take some time. Fury, you know, because after Usyk upset Joshua, that's going to take some time to have a resolution in itself again, because Joshua has already proven himself that he's the type of guy that will take an immediate rematch. And I think that the clause is already in there, so that's probably the fight that's going to happen next. And with that being said too, who knows, again, with these other, with the sanctioning bodies, it's always so crazy, all right? How many of the main ones that we recognize, WBO, WBA, I guess, because they suck, WBC, they all suck. IBF, you know, there's about four, but at least one of them will always say, hey, you got to fight my mandatory challenger before you go into this immediate rematch or something, because they always want to strip you, do something, and go on their own bit and then things get fractured again in their own way. So who knows which sanctioning body is going to try to pull something, all right? It might happen eventually. Usually it's the IBF that does something saying you have to fight a random mandatory contender before you go on to a major fight. And then they strip you and then two random guys fight for that belt and we end up with a Charles Martin as heavyweight champion. But as that being said, like, again, the fact of the matter is I think this fight, regardless of how the sanctioning bodies work themselves out or everything, we're going to have a definitive lineal top fighter, all right? Whether it be Fury or if Wilder pulls the upset, it could be Wilder. And Usyk, to his credit, after he gets through with his business with Joshua, he's the type of guy that he's not going to worry so much about the sanctioning bodies as much as challenging himself to be the top guy in the division. So he will fight that guy or try to make the best of it to fight that guy next. And hopefully from there we can get a resolution. But like I said earlier, the heavyweight division is really exciting right now. And regarding whoever wins this fight, I can't wait to see what the future will hold for it from there. And there's still like a solid, you know, contendership under that too. Like with who pick up a couple of alphabet belts, still, you know, main relevant division, like Dillian White is still a big name who can come up, who's obviously on the fringes of becoming a champion or fighting for the title again. Andy Ruiz, who just got rid of, you know, who made waves on Twitter for his ass tattoo, is, you know, still up there. there's a lot of things going on in the division right now. It's pretty exciting. I'm happy for it. I love the heavyweight division personally. So I can't wait to see what the future is going to hold after this weekend.
Yeah. Before, I don't want to drag this on too long, but I did want to ask. I wanted to be fair, but I also am curious. So there is a kind of an offshoot apart from the fight or apart from Fury Wilder and anything happening during the fight. There's been a lot of shit piled on to Deontay Wilder about the excuses that he's made. And I mean, rightly so. I'm not arguing that because they're kind of absurd, but even so, apart from the excuses, Tyson Fury, most of the things that he has said has been in the somewhat distant past, but he's said some pretty bad shit himself.
True.
Absolutely.
Looking back, there's a decent chance that in a number of those instances, they were either alcohol and or drug fueled. That doesn't excuse them. That doesn't make it okay. Although it does sound as though he has worked on at least some of those things since then. So I guess the first layer here is the kind of Tyson Fury being the hero or whatever in the situation, or the good guy or the believable guy or the whatever. I'm kind of curious about that in light of some of the shit he said. But then I guess the second layer is, and if like, anybody needs to opt out of answering this because of whatever, I get it, but I'm curious because of the MTK affiliation and what sounds to be a really very quickly developing situation with Pro Bellum, this company that has popped up over the last few weeks or so, that is
Shaker's company, right?
Yeah, and is suspected might have some sort of linkage with MTK. And to briefly explain for anybody listening going, what the fuck is MTK, I'll try to very quickly explain. It stands for Mac the Knife, and it was at first associated with Matthew Macklin, the former middleweight title holder from a handful of years ago. He no longer has any association now, but the acronym was kept, and it is essentially a management company that has been taken over, or allegedly, I should say, taken over by an Irish drug kingpin named Daniel Kinahan, or in some way, kind of, what word am I looking for? Like phantom run, ghost run, or something like that, you know, run by proxy by Daniel Kinahan and his crime syndicate that has a number of bodies to its name and has been known to push drugs and guns, and is now operating out of the Middle East because it's like no longer welcome in Ireland and other parts of in parts of the UK, etc. There is a heavy there are a bunch of heavy allegations that Daniel Kinahan is involved with this MTK management company, and as more than just an advisor, and that there's criminal activity going on. So I know that's a lot of shit that I just heaped onto there. And again, if you want, like, you're like, nah, I'm not gonna, Bryn's taking a drink. I don't know. No, you don't drink. So it ain't taking a drink of alcohol, but it, yeah. it says absinthe, everybody. It says absinthe and cocaine. No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, I'm curious because Tyson Fury does seem to be kind of painted as the good guy. He seems to be portrayed as the, like I said, believable one in this. Like, Tyson, Deontay Wilder's making all sorts of excuses. He's full of shit. And I don't know. I think that it kind of makes it a very complex ethical situation, which is, boxing's already complex in terms of ethics. But I don't know. I'm curious if you guys have any outlook on that.
I think the MTK stuff is really bad. And I think you're right. Like, where Tyson Fury was coming from with a lot of the statements that were incredibly misogynistic, there was homophobic stuff. I mean, he kind of relished in it, in just being a provocateur. But I think we also, I'm surprised he didn't get more of his due for the comeback story of what he came back from in that second fight, being so overweight. I mean, the mental health issues, the suicidal ideation, substance abuse issues. I mean, it was incredible the way he came back. And that it wasn't a big narrative I found in the American media. It just wasn't. And yet, you know, when he's singing these songs after his victory, and his entrance is like this big theatrical thing, he certainly has a way with an audience that seems as close as we've had to kind of an Ali-like energy, in terms of he wants center stage, he wants to have all of this risk, he loves the pressure, and then he delivers in a way that was like Joe Namath-like, in terms of, here's what I'm going to do. And most of the media said, you can't do this against the most dangerous puncher who's ever been born, sort of thing. So it was interesting to watch that. But I don't know. I just think there's something about him that, and this is true with Ali. I mean, like, there's a, you know, the Ken Burns documentary on Ali. It's intriguing that they omit that he beat his second wife, punched her twice. You know, because we don't want to think about it. Just like, how often do you hear about John Lennon being a serial hitter of women, to use his term? Not often. Whereas another person, it would define them forever if they did it once. Because if we don't like them, it's like, ha ha, we have evidence now to cancel them. But if we really like the figure, it's much harder to have this stuff stick to who they are. So, and I'm not sure how we should adjudicate it. Like, should Fury, for making these comments or being associated with MTK or defending them, should we hold him accountable and not buy his fights? I don't know, but I'm not against you if that's your position. Obviously, Wilder has a history with hitting a woman, being incredibly violent with a woman. It's not brought up very much. If you're a writer covering these guys and you bring it up, it's not a welcome topic.
Yeah, you're not covering them anymore.
No, exactly right.
That's what I'm going to go with, guys, is that, like, when it comes to someone being extremely popular, whether they're a boxer, a musician, whatever it is, a lot of those things that they end up getting accused of or who they're associating with get brushed up. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's like rose-colored shades that they wear or whatever. That, like, you know, people look at him in a different way, and that a lot of things, because of how much of a genius they were, if they were musicians or things that they get into, it, you know, we don't want to, we, everybody, all of our heroes have some shadiness to them. And that's the way to look at it with this one too, is that, like, you know, again, like you mentioned, a lot of the things that Fury is into with the MTK, the other comments, stuff like that, people are tending to just kind of like swipe it under the rug so they can keep their fandom. Ali did a lot of crazy shit back in the day. And if you look at it today, the way he's looked at today, he's like, you know, one of the most important people in history, and everyone generally loves him and what he stood for and all that. But if you really dig into the past of what he got into, he did a lot of nasty stuff himself. He said a lot of nasty things himself. He did a lot of nasty things. All, you know, one of my heroes is Miles Davis. He beat, you know, he beat all of his wives and was a drug addict and did a lot of bad stuff. Like, it's been a history of everybody trying to cover this under the rug so we can keep the narrative of how great they were and forget what they, you know, what our heroes were into. So I get it.
And you know, to add to that, I mean, Ali was pro segregation. He was pro.
He went to a Ku Klux Klan rally and was quoted on that.
Well, he actually
stuff like, you know, Ali to do all this shit. Yeah,
he actually didn't go, but he lied to say
he did. Okay, I lied. Oh, sorry. I'm
just no, not you. But he boasted that he did when he didn't actually go to it. I mean, he was pro George Wallace. And you're absolutely right. He boasted about the Klan because he said we have the same agenda in terms of segregation. You know, how often is it brought up that he's citing his religious principles for avoiding Vietnam and was serially cheating on every woman he was with endlessly?
Completely.
So it was total a la carte religious reverence. And I mean, Mike Tyson, I mean, that's the other thing we need to think about here is how this reflects on us when we, it's not just that they've done some bad things, but when Mike Tyson is convicted for rape and says, I'm innocent of this, but I've done six or seven things that are far worse, which is what he said to Jerry Gray. He was far more marketable coming out of prison than when he went into prison. And what does that say about us in terms of, like we didn't do the crime, but we're more excited to see him because he is that dark vessel, like not the feel-good story that he was with Customato and where... Like, we forget this, right? Because we think, oh, Michael Jordan is the great commercial juggernaut with Nike and Gatorade and all that. Mike Tyson was, too. He had Diet Pepsi. He had Nintendo. He had Kodak. He had Toyota. He had, like, the most conservative companies in America backing him around the time of Michael Spinks. I mean, this guy should have been a billionaire by the time he was 30 years old. He should have been the first sports billionaire that existed. But the rape moved it away so that he couldn't make any money commercially, like with representing products, but he was far more commercially viable post that 3.5 years in jail for rape. And that's not a very comforting commentary on us in terms of what our values are and where we throw our money to support athletes. And you know, even Kobe Bryant and stuff like that, again, it's another issue where it's like, should we bring up what happened in Colorado? His defense attorney is happy to give out her name so that she gets repeated death threats. It's weird which athletes we like and which ones we're looking for ammunition to try to dismiss. So,
I mean, look at the late 90s, you know, when after Tyson bit Holyfield's ear. Sure, he had a lot of, people against him and everyone saying you need to ban him. He's a psychopath and all that. But at the same time, that was the same era that Jerry Springer really came like to really popularity, all kinds of other stuff. Like that was the age of the edge. And Tyson, everybody was really hyped to see what was going to be his next move. When WrestleMania hit, that was the age of like when WWE moved apart from WCW because they brought Mike Tyson in fresh off the Holyfield bit and everything else with that to referee a match at WrestleMania. Like that was the one that pushed them over the edge. Like people in general love this type of like craziness and that type of like edginess of like, you know, when it comes to you don't know the unpredictable, you know, the unpredictable of what they're going to do next, especially if they're a high profile celebrity who knocks the hell out of people in general and stuff like that. They're excited to see what they're going to do, even though it goes against their morals and all that because they just want to watch the train wreck ahead.
Yeah. I mean, O.J. Simpson said after he got off of the murder trial, I'm getting way more women now than I ever did before when I was like a good guy. Now that they think I'm a murderer, there's far more people attracted to me in many ways. Like it's bizarre. I mean, remember, I mean, like true crime is the most mainstream, shallow form of entertainment we have. We love murder.
That's how we do our show, right, Pat?
but I mean, it's an interesting thing. I mean, like, I have my ambivalence with boxing. I mean, people are dying. A female fighter was killed and stuff like that. I mean, they're choosing to do it. But some of the background of these guys, I mean, you're right. Tyson Fury has some statements that are there and some affiliations that are highly questionable. And Wilder has a history, too. And, you know, a lot of these fighters have histories, and I'm not sure exactly how we should go. I mean, maybe each person has to come to their own conclusions about what's acceptable to them to support. But I do laud certainly Tyson Fury for coming back from a lot of the adversity that he had to overcome. I mean, I think it's an incredible story.
I couldn't agree more. Like, he really, when you saw him after he beat Klitschko, he totally went through a tailspin. He was dabbling in drugs. You saw the videos of him just completely obese and ballooned. And the fact that he was able to come back from that, as a person myself who's like struggled with anxiety and depression himself, like, I have to commend him. It's not easy. It really isn't easy. And like you mentioned, Brent, it's not, you know, it has been kind of downplayed with everything else that's happened with their fights, so all the other dramas, the rumors, and innuendos, all these other shit that's gone down with it. But like, you know, the fact that Tyson Fury was able, in fact, before even Wilder was able to do that, like the fact to just come back and able to become a professional again and carry on with his career was a, you know, major accomplishment in itself.
I don't disagree at all. And I think that I don't think any of us would proclaim that we have like the answer or the answers to how we should be treating this morally, ethically, in terms of what the associations
we're all of us are into boxing, fans exactly. of boxing, right about boxing. Exactly. I mean, how moral and ethically can we be already?
Exactly. And just like Bryn said, I guess it's up to everybody to decide what their line is. You know, it's up to everybody to decide, well, so-and-so has an affiliation with that fighter, so therefore, hands off. I'm not watching those fights. I'm not watching on that network, or whatever the case may be. If that's the stand that you want to take, I'm not going to tell you are right or wrong, but regardless, I do think that part of making this conversation more complete and more complex is addressing this kind of stuff, even if it's just bringing it up, even if it's not totally professing to have an answer, you know, because not a lot of people are going to. That's the problem, is that there are a lot of podcasts and shows, and they're not going to be like these kinds of issues aren't going to be talked about intelligently. They're going to be yelled about and screamed about, and a bunch of rumors about some shit you saw on message board or YouTube mm-hmm. are going to be yelled. But point is, and that's not to say, you know, well, we're the fine tea sipping fucking people here, but point is, you know, like we're not afraid to talk about it in a slightly different way, I think. So we should.
No, it has to be drawn like that. It's the same thing with, you know, with the Hall of Fame season coming up and people bringing up the same questions like, oh, are you going to vote for Roy Jones? Are you going to show the same ethics that you had for James Toney that you did for Roy Jones this coming year when it comes to PEDs and who you vote for and stuff like that?
Who's voting for Vinny Paz? Don't answer that. Go ahead. Just keep going.
Well, like, you know, it just comes down to it. Like, we're all involved in boxing. We're one of the most crazy, you know, with everything that goes involved in it, you got to question your ethics already being involved in the sport to begin with. So from there, you just have, like you mentioned, Pat, you just have to kind of draw the line of where you want to stand and where you want to like hold your line on people in certain situations and all that. You're already involved in the sport, you know, with a sport so wild and unethical as it is, you know, at that point after that, then you get to draw your line of where you want to be at, I guess.
Right. And I mean, I guess that if that's the line you're drawing for this particular event, that means you're going to miss out on an undercard like Robert Hellenius versus Adam Kownacki.
That fight was fun as shit. Their first fight was awesome.
You know, I mean, I honestly thought that it was a slobber knocker of a fight. And it was the kind of fight where, like, I don't mind seeing a rematch of that. And I'm being earnest when I'm saying, you know, they're going to miss out on this. But Efe Ajagba versus Frank Sanchez also happening on the undercard. That looks like it's going to be a real fun fight. You know, they have a handful of other heavyweight fights. Got J-Rock Williams coming back, Edgar Berlanga, very hard-hitting super middleweight that's on the way up. I mean, it's not the greatest of all fight cards, but there are some names on there. And I think coupled with the main event, I'm reasonably excited to see it, and I'm reasonably excited to see how it shakes out.
I'm going to go see it in a movie theater in Brooklyn, which is the first time I've done that in a long time. But I'm curious to see how many people are going to do it, if COVID will impact the kind of... Most of the time I've done that, which is maybe four or five times with a Vegas fight, it's always packed. at a theater. I mean, I know it sounds like I'm in 1973 doing like a closed circuit, but it's actually kind of fun. Like the people who are into it are really into it. But I'm curious to see, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think the popularity is there for this fight? Will it do good numbers with pay-per-view?
Brandon, I'm the same way as you. I've been to a few theaters in Astoria and Queens to watch fights before. Like, I watched Mayweather Pacquiao. I think I watched the first Fury Wilder fight in a theater. They get packed, like you said, you know, and yeah, a lot of people get very enthusiastic for it, too. There's a lot of boxing fans for it. It's a fun atmosphere. I mean, imagine what, like, a place where you go to watch a giant movie and a huge projector screen, you get to see it for a fight. That's pretty awesome. I don't know. I think that, like, for a theater fight, like, most people that are boxing fans will generally go for it, because if you can watch, if you're going to pay either $75, $80, whatever this is being charged for on pay-per-view, as opposed to going and paying $20, $25 to a theater to watch it and, you know, buy your popcorn and candy and all your other bullshit to, like, enjoy it, that most people will go for their bang for their buck to do that. Yeah, so, you know, it's a cool atmosphere, and it's going to be a fun atmosphere. If I can find the local theater, hopefully the Kauffman over here in Astoria is going to be showing it, then I might do the same. In general, I'm going to be curious to see how many, and like, I know a lot of bars out here are going to be showing it because they do the same thing for UFC fights. And if it's a big heavyweight fight, outside of a Mayweather or a Pacquiao or one of those type of fights, usually for a big heavyweight fight, they will show it in bars out here too.
Yeah. I think that the COVID pandemic is definitely a bit of a wild card as far as what kind of numbers pay-per-views can do right now. And they are going to be kind of, at least in part, dependent on what people can afford. And a lot of people in the U.S. are just not doing super great financially right now. So I wouldn't expect it to do super great, not from the perspective of it's not good and people don't want to see it, but just from the perspective of, are people going to be plunking down money to see it? I don't know. But I will say, if you have more options that are more like movie theater type of options, those, I just think in general, fights would sell better if you had those. I understand you can't do that for every fight, but those are pretty cool options. I honestly, I couldn't venture a guess as far as the buys. I don't want to. No, I don't know. I'll probably say some shit that's like absolutely off the wall and stupid and then get attacked on Twitter. I don't want it.
No, should you, man. Arguing over pay-per-view buys and stats and all the other stuff is really crazy. But I will say this. If they show the fight in Queens, there's going to be a lot of people there, because every time I've been to a movie theater for a fight out here in Astoria, it's been pretty packed to the hill with a lot of people that I'm very excited. So,
well, what happens, I mean, with both possible outcomes, I'm curious what you guys think. Like, if Wilder knocks out Fury, it just has some devastating performance where he just wipes the floor with him. Mm-hmm. What's next for both guys? And then vice versa, if Fury just annihilates Wilder, what's next?
I'll let you take it, Pat.
There's going to be some rebuilding, some serious rebuilding. And I would imagine at least, okay, let me rephrase that. There might not be any rebuilding whatsoever. There might not be any changes at all, but there should be. If Deontay Wilder lost to Fury again and got blown out, there should be a lot of introspection, a lot of serious revisions of tape and stuff like that, just looking at what he's doing wrong. But of course, he's now at a stage in his career where it's like, how many changes could he possibly really make and have them stick? On the other hand, if he came in there and won, Tyson Fury's got a lot of rebuilding to do. You know, he got dinged around pretty decently in a very short span in the first fight, but took almost like zero damage in that second fight. And so I don't know the nature of the contract going into this fight should Wilder win. And, you know, maybe there's nothing. Maybe there's no rematch clause, so it's wide open. But that definitely would massively shake stuff up. And I guess would put the prospect of a Wilder-Joshua fight, should Joshua defeat Usyk in the rematch, right back on the table.
I could say that, but again, with the boxing politics, again, it would be so hard for them to try to build it up because of all the arguments, who's going to be the favorite, the percentages, who's the, you know, red side, blues, whatever you want to call it. But I'm not sure if, well, the way Wilder has reacted, all right, with the second fight and the way he lost and all the excuses you come up with, is not just general excuses of, hey, I wasn't there, I had this X, Y, and Z problem. He, like, it's been like a lot of people have said it's almost disturbing how like crazy his excuses have become, and just realization that he actually lost a fight, that fight. And I'm not sure how he would react if he got whooped even worse in this fight. Like, I really don't, you know, it's that's what's so intriguing about this, because there's so many question marks of how people, how the fallout is of the result of Saturday is going to be, you know. Wilder, a guy like Joshua, all right, when Joshua first lost to Ruiz, and he actually admitted, you know what, he caught me, he beat me, I'm just going to come back and do it. He showed me there that mentally he was all right, that he'd be able to, like, recover from that, and he has shown that since then. He was able to beat Ruiz in a rematch, whether he beats Usyk or not in a rematch. He showed in that fight, in his loss, in admitting that he lost and going through it and just being cool with it, that it was all right. Wilder never showed that after this rematch. He completely lost it, you know, from all of his excuses, all of his conspiracies, everything, firing Breeling, all this other stuff. He completely showed that mentally he's not there. Now, he feels a lot stronger now that he's been with Malik Scott and he's going through all this stuff and Fury's going through X, Y, and Z. But if he loses this fight again, I'm not sure if he'll ever even fight again or what he'll have to go through. He might disappear for a while, because if he goes through all this, all these conspiracies, everything, and Fury beats him outright this time and stops him, who knows how Wilder's going to react to that because of how badly he reacted that first time. Fury, on the other hand, I have no idea. Fury is such a complex individual, the way he acts, the way he reacts, the way his mind works and everything like that. I almost feel that he would be better off, better than Wilder would be in taking a loss, but I still don't know because he hasn't lost yet. But I feel that if Wilder loses this time, I'm not sure what kind of future he's going to have left, because mentally, I have no idea how he's going to react to this. Fury might take off for a little while, and, you know, who knows? Hopefully he doesn't fall off the deep end again or whatever may happen with him. But I think that Fury will handle it better if he would lose than Wilder would lose if he loses again. Like, if Wilder loses again, he might just disappear. And then Fury will be able to move on to potentially Usyk or Joshua or whoever, you know, maybe even a fight with Dillian White, because he's obviously a top contender and, you know, somewhere along there. But Wilder is the major wild card for me. I, like, either if he wins this fight, he'll still be a factor. If he loses it, I'm not sure if he's ever going to be around again.
What do you think, Bryn, and what do you think is going to happen? Like, what do you think happens in the fight?
I think the big question here for Wilder is, did he believe any of his excuses? Like, is it just a show?
He forced himself to believe it.
Okay, so, I mean, if that's the case, and he's inflating all of this stuff, because, I mean, it reminds me a bit of sort of Mike Tyson getting out of jail, where it's sort of like, I'm better than I ever was before. And there was no real evidence on display that he was in any way better. Like, he clearly had deteriorated heavily. He was there to be hit. He was not as evasive. Like, all of the fundamentals were not improving. But he kept saying to people, I'm even better, and was tremendously selective with his opponents to give the impression that he was better. And I wonder with that, with Wilder a little bit here, is his ego so fragile after what happened that he's tried to concoct this absurd explanation for what happened? And when he gets back into the ring, he's facing the guy who has more confidence, who is more relaxed, has the bigger reach, is clearly able to hurt him, is clearly able to out-jab him, outthink him, has, you know, a big array of game plans to employ. I mean, very adaptable, malleable fighter with Fury. What does he do? Does he just get more and more desperate? If he gets desperate, he's going to probably get knocked out quick, I think. Because we've seen, I mean, when Fury steps up and actually throws with conviction, Wilder is not taking the punches too well. Contrary to what he said, where it's like, he never hurt me or anything, he really hurt him. He really hurt him. He's bleeding out of his ear. He's dropping him in some cases with one shot, dropped him with a body shot. I just don't know how Wilder is going to recover. And you have to kind of work backwards, I think, from the grandiose claims of, you know, like this weird royal imagery that Wilder keeps invoking. It just must make him think, like, I'm going to go back to having to work three jobs. I've never really got the respect that I deserved. And if I keep playing up, maybe people will believe this kind of thing as confidence. But I don't believe it. And I think Fury just seems to have his number. And if Wilder's going into this with his confidence really struggling, that's a bad look against a guy like Fury, who's not going to get tired and loves the big stage and has the tools to make this relatively easy. I mean, if you have a guy who can't turn with you and you're twitching and stuff like that is just totally throwing him off balance, where he's not even going to throw a meaningful jab at you other than these sort of lunging Hail Mary right hands. It's hard for me to imagine Wilder doing well in this fight. And I think he could lose quickly. And I think Fury is going to enjoy probably trying to take him out in the first couple rounds. And I think he has everything he needs to do it. Could that expose him to a counter shot? Sure. But I don't know. And then where does Wilder go? I mean, I think Wilder's ego is going to really struggle to put the pieces back together. And I think he's going to get into trouble. And Fury, I think, also similarly, has so much chaos in his life. Like, he's so drawn to it. There's so much self-destructiveness in his nature, as well as the mental health issues that are there. I don't know that he's long for this earth in many respects, or, you know, like, I just think he is going to seek out drama wherever he goes. But I think he's going to do okay in the short term, though, in this fight.
And Aris, what do you think is going to happen?
I mean, I think that Fury should be the favorite, and I'm going with Fury in this fight. I don't know that the training that he's done with Malik Scott is going to be able to do enough that's going to be able to, change enough that he can beat a guy like Fury. In the first fight, he lost almost every round except for the rounds that he was able to drop Fury in. In the second fight, he just got beat up in. And I don't see that, like, as much as it's been, like, you know, improving. He obviously is much more motivated. He feels better. He feels refreshed, whatever it may be. I don't think that that's going to be enough to be able to beat a guy like Fury. Fury has his number. Fury feels very, very confident. If you watch that press conference today, Wilder was saying a lot. Fury was talking back, but Fury obviously is still in his head with it and just totally confident, no fear, no nothing. There's no doubt in it. Even though Wilder was saying, oh yeah, I feel nervous energy, there was nothing nervous about what he was saying. That's Fury being Fury. And with him being that confident, I mean, he knows he has different layers and different styles and much, much more tools to his trade than Wilder does. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to equate to another victory for Fury. I don't know if it's going to be as bludgeoning the way it was the second fight, that he was able to beat him up and just stop him within six rounds. But I think, again, that he's still going to come out on top at the end of it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Every so often I'll kind of like go out there and make some sort of pick that like doesn't really make sense. But that's kind of what this comes down to is, and I heard a handful of people saying something similar, that they understand picking Deontay Wilder to win, but not arguing that it makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like they understand that he could land that shot, but that's not where the odds are. And on top of that, he's already landed that shot, like two of them. And that didn't take Tyson Fury out. So it's kind of like, you know, it's really difficult to argue, and just to kind of briefly go back to what you were saying with the kind of like excuses and whether or not he believed the excuses. To me, it's almost like I'll be quick before we get out of here, but we all know this stuff being on social media. We've all seen those people who are like friends or friends of friends, whatever, acquaintances, And they're like posting some shit on social media that are like, I'm not going to let the haters stop me today. I got so many haters. I'm just shaking them off and I'm continuing forward to stardom. And it's like, bro, you fucking work at Starbucks for the last 6 years and you're struggling and nobody knows who you are. Who are you talking about? Haters. Nobody knows who you are. And obviously people know who Deontay Wilder is, but the point is like that kind of like weird delusion that you're going to be like posting that on social media that like you think people don't fucking know you and know you have zero haters. Come on, dude. People know you. You don't have any haters. And but it's the same kind of like delusion and self-belief where he probably really does believe those kinds of things to a degree because one, he's a high-level athlete, and two, I don't know how he could continue forward not believing them. I mean, that would be a hell of a front to put up. So yeah, I think that in this fight, I don't know what it does to him mentally, but I do think that Tyson Fury probably, like you said, Bryn, has his number stylistically, but I think more importantly, understands that he's already most likely taken Deontay Wilder's best couple of shots, mm-hmm. survived them, mm-hmm. and knows what happens when he just comes forward. So it's, I think that's the outcome you really have to ride.
It was that first fight, you know, with that knockdown in the first fight and him being able to rise from that kind of like silenced everybody, I would think.
Right. It's just logically speaking, it's the outcome you really got to ride with, you know?
I feel like this fight in a weird way. And I mean, I remember going to this, I was living in Spain at the time in the early 2000s. It's going to be like Tyson versus Lennox Lewis, where people were just saying, well, if Tyson gets that guy, Lewis has never taken a punch like Tyson could deliver in that fight. And it's like everything about this matchup overwhelmingly favors one guy. Like Tyson does not have a shot in this fight. And it was all him trying to sell this. He's never been in there with somebody like me. And it was all press conferences, really trying to amp himself up to think, I'm 36 years old, but somehow I can tear down Lennox Lewis. I've sparred with him in Catskill. Cuss was there cheering me on and everything. It's like, no, this is never going to happen. This is a horrible matchup for you. It's all wrong, as we've basically seen with Fury. I mean, I wasn't entirely saying that I think Fury's won every second of every round. I'm just saying that you could make an argument, not only has he won every round where he hasn't been knocked down, but he's won almost every second. And I mean, I rewatched the second fight for this, and it's just that mode and that mentality of just going in there like George Foreman and you're a boss and you just own the ring. You can see immediately on Wilder's face, like, wait, you've not gotten the script. You're not supposed to fight me this way. And I don't know how to keep you off me, because you have more reach than I do. You're more confident, you're quicker, and your timing is better, and you're far more elusive. What am I supposed to do? And then it's just this like fait accompli of just waiting for the fucking hammer to land.
Yeah.
And it starts landing. And then it's like, well, wait a minute. What? I've got to hang in here. I've got to be a man and take this kind of beating. And his corner mercifully throws him a towel, because it's clear, like, our guy can't do anything. Our guy doesn't have the skills to do anything against somebody like this, who's this big, this strong, and this confident, and this capable. So unless he gets lucky, like if he comes out there and tries to swing with a home run and lands it, and Fury's equilibrium is fucked up from the outset, and Fury's not able to recover, okay. But is that really like, how often does that happen
exactly at this level?
Yeah, with somebody exactly that has some good defense like Fury does, who's elusive and certainly knows that probably the
puncher's chance.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like Lennox Lewis. Like, Lewis did not take chances in that fight for the first six rounds. Why bother? Just wear him out. This is a little midget next to me at 6'5 with 81 inches of reach. This guy has like Rocky Marciano size. I'm just going to keep him at the end of my punches and just wear him down. And eventually I'm going to start landing the right hand and just hammer and hammer and hammer. Tyson will get more desperate, and then I'll close the show. It's exactly what he did.
What the fuck you doing? You're fucking around in there. You're getting caught with some crazy shit. Don't turn and fight him.
This motherfucker's dangerous. Are you crazy? He's dangerous.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I just think it's kind of the same thing here. I mean, I know they're much closer in stature, the two guys, but I just think, like, you're Tyson Fury, just jab him, wear him down, back him up. You don't really have to take too many chances because he's so uncoordinated going back. Mm-hmm.
He was already in the first round of the first fight. He was already putting his hand behind his back, doing that gimmick with him, too. And then the second fight, like you said, he just built up weight, just bullied him, beat him up, and used his feints, used his jab. Even when Fury's at his absolute biggest in his first fight, back when his comeback, when he was, you know, beating depression and stuff, like, you saw him use the same similar maneuvers, what he was able to be slipping and all that, even using his belly to, like, deflect punches a la Frankie Swindell, who we mentioned in our last show, Pat. But, like, you know, Fury has that type of skill. He has a different level of skills and attributes that Wilder doesn't have.
Yeah.
And Wilder is almost trying to build that and trying to say that, you know what, it doesn't matter. I built that now and I know how to beat everything up. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It really, really doesn't. Like, his best bet is for him to be able to land a shot again that Fury is going to go super defensive in boxing again. If Fury reverts back to how he was in the first fight, which I don't think he's going to, like, really just, like, super defensive everything, Wilder will have a chance. If Fury comes in the way he did in the second and adds a few more layers to it, then I don't know what Wilder's going to be able to do because he can't fight on the back foot like that. Like, you know, it's been mentioned earlier on the show already. It's not in his nature. He's not a guy that can box like that and slip. It's not easy.
Yeah, those skills are really the cushion. You know, the cushion that Tyson Fury needs for this fight, where Deontay Wilder just doesn't really have any cushion. He has one option. There's really one way that he could win. He's not outpointing Tyson Fury, and, you know, he's in the minds of many lucky that he got that draw in the first fight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the options are extremely limited going into here.
I think the only way he could have won is he would need somebody from boxing with, like, a Mensa level IQ. And I mean,
somebody
from
Jersey.
That's a good, yeah. I mean, somebody from Jersey with a Mensa level IQ who's kind of on the comeback trail. You know, he's had some skirmishes with the law, but it's in a sympathetic kind of way.
Yeah. You know, somebody whose nickname rhymes with happy.
You know, and I mean, I think the other thing is again, we always look at the negative side of drinking and driving and the victims that are there, but we don't think of anybody supporting drinking and driving. And I'm sure there are some mothers out there, at least one in the case of Bobby Chez, who would support. I'm just playing. No, I find it really hard to think that Wilder has a shot in this fight. He could certainly get lucky with the puncher's chance. How often does the puncher's chance actually work out? Like, it's like seldom. A 2% thing. If that's your...
Yeah, very seldom.
Because it was like fucking... I had to go through this with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, like, talking to people that weren't from boxing. And they're just like, well, puncher's chance. I mean, he can hit pretty hard. I've seen some of the highlights of that guy. I'm like, this is Floyd Mayweather. Do you think there's a little leaguer who's going to hit Nolan Ryan pitching to him? No.
Exactly.
This is the stupidest proposition.
Yeah, and the actual opposite happened, where Floyd Mayweather scored the first stoppage since fucking 2011, which itself was the first stoppage since like 2004 or some shit like that. You know, so, it's, yeah.
All right, let me ask you guys this question because I'm curious now. With the undercard, we've talked so much about Fury and Wilder and all the scenarios. Do you see anybody, any upsets or anybody taking an L, F.A. Ojabba, Big Baby Anderson, anything like that? Or do you think it's kind of formality?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, Konaki is pretty vulnerable, as we saw, because Hellenius was thought of as, like, you know, fairly washed. Because he was one of the big...
Hellenius was definitely... He was back in from the, like, the early 2010s, 2011s. Like, that's when he was making his bones.
Yeah, I remember when he first kind of, like, came about or whatever, when he was first coming up as a prospect, and he was like, you know, everybody check out this guy's, like, 6'7", Viking dude. I remember that, and he kind of just petered out.
He was featured in the Hall of Fame as, like, a guest... way back then too, so yeah,
he kind of petered out, like a lot of the big tall heavyweight prospects that came around during that time and many others. But anyway, yeah. So Kanaki, he's already kind of vulnerable, and I don't think that would be really. He's already lost too, so it wouldn't be an upset or anything like that. I mean, I think that probably one of the bigger upsets would be if like Berlanga were to lose, because he's got a lot of, at least he had the, a lot of these guys, their momentum's been killed by the pandemic, totally not their fault. But Berlanga is one of the guys that I think one of the fighters that a lot of people were excited about because of how hard he hits. So if he were to lose, that would kind of be like almost like a James Kirkland Ishida situation, you know, seeing a hard young hard hitting prospect go out. That would be kind of bad.
Sure.
I see it just being like kind of bumper cars, you know, like I'm just looking forward to some big guys. I think it's a good undercard for just like people coming to this fight because it's like a big heavyweight fight in Vegas, you know, like non-boxing fans or insiders, you know, just give them action, give them big guys hitting each other, you know, with high knockout percentages. So for that, it's just kind of good entertainment, but I think it'll be pretty predictable.
I'm looking forward, not so much for Berlanga, because I think that fight will be more so a formality. Like Top Rank isn't going to, like, he'll get rounds, potentially, hopefully, but, like, you know, they're not going to put him in with someone that's going to, like, knock the hell out of him or potentially beat him. But with the heavyweight fights featuring Ojaba, the rematch between Hellenius and Adam Kanaki, and, you know, the other fight, too, featuring, was it Big Baby Anderson? Like, that, you know, those fights are the ones that are going to, like, you know, the future of the division. Anderson, a lot of momentum's going for him. A lot of people are excited about him. He's been featured on ESPN during the pandemic a lot, and a lot of people have high praise for him. Plus, there was a lot of rumors that he was beating up Fury in sparring, because there was all those rumors going around that Fury was getting his ass kicked by everybody in sparring. Ojaba, also the same thing. He's been featured, obviously, on the PBC thing. He went viral for that guy walking out before their fight, and other stuff, too. So it's solid because, again, it's heavyweights. In the heavyweight division, usually, there's always excitement and good stuff. Sometimes it can suck and can be boring, but I think the way they match these fights were on for a really, really solid night on Saturday.
I hope so. You know, it's got at least entertainment written on the card. So
the undercard reminds me almost like one of those, like, HBO Young Night of the Young Heavyweights type deals back in the day.
Kind of does, yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Well, hey, I really appreciate both of you guys, you know, taking the time to join forces and, like, Voltron this fucking fight with me, you know?
A good reference.
I mean, I'm hyped for it, man. I'm definitely hyped. Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna get manscaped as a result of just talking to you.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? It rubs off like that, and the pun is definitely intended.
Well, I'm going to have a mat under me because Manscaped provides it as a free gift.
That's
hell yeah. Those
oils,
yeah.
Mats.
And after it's done, I need the toner because I just want to have that revitalizing, cool feel that I can really only get from the gel that Manscaped provides, which I appreciate.
And if this were not, you know, a mostly PG-13 show, I would make sure that people understood more clearly, but we want toned balls. That's what men want.
If you want to be a parent, I think parental guidance, I mean, at the outset, as I think if you go to the Manscaped website, you can see for yourself, 85% of your partners seek out good hygiene. So if you want to be a parent,
100%.
Go to Manscaped. Absolutely. Trust me.
So go to manscaped.com. There you go. And go to manscaped.com and use the code GLOVE, GLOVE, to get 20% off and free shipping. And you know,
get your girlfriend or wife to wear a glove while she's manscaping.
Either way, you know, make it a tandem activity. Okay, we're starting to kind of get in. We're maybe dragging out of the PG-13 area here. But look, I do appreciate you guys taking the time and being good sports about the whole ball trimming experience here. But everybody, I appreciate you listening in or watching in, whatever the case may be. And if you are on social media, for instance, like Twitter, follow my buddy Bryn Jonathan Butler at Brynicio, BRINICIO. Follow my buddy Aris Pina at Punch Zone Aris. Also subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're watching or listening that way. Very helpful. And subscribe via also, you know, the podcast apps and all those sorts of things. Guys, we'll talk soon. We'll have to do this again.
This is the last.
Don't drink and drive. Manscaped.